Okay, good morning, everyone, on this blustery, wintry day in Philadelphia. We are here at the United Lodge of Theosophists, and we are dedicated to promulgating the straight line teachings of Theosophy as brought forth in the latter part of the 19th century. But these teachings are time honored and really eternal. So, in order to put forth these teachings of the wisdom religion, we have two meetings per week. Most importantly, we want to mention that the Wednesday meeting is 15 minutes earlier than it used to be. And so it begins at 7:30, and it's now a one-hour meeting, and it ends at 8:30. The library, the reference library, is open prior to the meeting, 15 minutes earlier as well, from 5:15 until 7:15. And there's always a librarian there for assistance in any kind of individual study that you may be engaged in. So we have, we have all the back issues of magazine Theosophy and the Theosophical movement. We have comparative religions. We have science books and, general reference books as well. At the beginning, in the middle of the room there by the fireplace is a book table where we sell at cost the straight line Theosophical works, and we have pamphlets and a couple of free things. We also have a local publication, Theosophical Independence, which is free. So the doors open at 5:15 on Wednesdays, and on Sundays the doors open at 10:30, and the meeting begins promptly at 11 and ends promptly at 12. And this month, we are on evolution, and a good reference for that is chapter 2 of The Ocean of Theosophy. So it's the path of spiritual evolution, and last week we had the necessity for human perfectibility, and this week we have the plan and purpose of evolution. So how we do it, we have a panel here of two short talks, one on the plan and one on the purpose of evolution. And then we have questions, answers, discussions, comments afterwards. So that's about it. We would like to read the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or the inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So, just a second here. So part of the evolutionary process, a spiritual evolution, is mentioned in our declaration, which was just read, and that is the exemplification and practice of the principles through a truer realization of the self and a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. So the self, of course, being the self of all, which is our basis for universal brotherhood, not just in the human kingdom, but in all the kingdoms above and below. There is one chain, and there is a plan, there is a progression. There's an orderly unfolding from within without of the spiritual essence, which is in everything. Inanimate matter and what we call inanimate matter, which is really just sleeping matter, is another way we could say it. As in the mineral kingdom. And then we progress through the plant kingdom, where there's sensation and sensitivity, the animal kingdom, where we have mobility, and we have consciousness in each kingdom to a degree, but we do not have full self-consciousness until we reach the human kingdom. And we are not fully aware until we are perfected human beings, which we all have that in essence. We are all perfect in a sense, but we have not realized our perfection. So we want to mention, as is discussed in chapter 2, that evolution is a cycle. It is a process of coming forth or development. At the beginning of the day of Brahma, all things come forth from the non-developed principle, and at the coming on of Brahma's night, they are all resolved into it again, and this process goes on from age to age. So, Brahma is the God in the Bible who we would call it the deific principle because it is no thing. But in the Bible, it is mentioned that it is around whose pavilion is darkness. The finite mind cannot grasp the infinite. The part cannot encompass the whole. And we are parts or rays or sparks of the divine. We are mind beings. We have that manas principle, which is mind. The word man comes from manas. We are sexless in our essence. And part of the plan of evolution, and we're not even talking about cosmic evolution because there is cosmic evolution, there's human evolution, there's evolution of the various kingdoms. But in the human evolution, there's the unfolding from within on seven planes in seven ways. There's seven globes, but man himself is a sevenfold being, has three permanent, the immortal ego is spirit, spiritual soul, and mind. And we are mind beings because the spirit and spiritual soul ensouls the entire universe. But we are actively evolving through self-induced and self-devised means. So it's that will, which is spirit and action, that impels us on our evolutionary process. That is all part of the plan. So the first differentiation of the unknown principle, the deific principle, is spirit, which appears, with which appears matter and mind. And then akasha is produced from matter and spirit. Will force of spirit is spirit. Will force is spirit in action. And then life is the result of the action of akasha moved by spirit upon matter. Mind is the intelligent part of the cosmos, and in mind is the plan of the cosmos. It is fixed or contained. So, and it's brought over from prior periods of evolution. We were once on the moon chain, which was a seven globes. We only see the dead representative, which is slowly, very slowly, but it is disintegrating. That was where our prior evolution took place. And then we came over like an army or a river until a point where no more could come. There's always a cutoff point. It's like a school. Evolution is like a school. There's grades, and there's, if you don't make the grade, then you go back. You need to repeat. So we need to keep that image that that the plan is, it's cyclical. And there's equal periods of rest and activity, just like we have day and night. And that the great day of, the just one day of Brahma, which is one period of evolution, is 4,320,000,000 years. And that is just one day in the life of Brahma. And the whole cycle is 100 years. So we won't even, we do know the figure, but it's so, we can't encompass it. It's just, it truly makes your head spin. But by making your head spin, then you need to get grounded in the philosophy. And so it's good. It's good to be puzzled. That's all.
So, that gave us the idea of the plan, a universal plan indeed. But then we come to ourselves, and then here's where the questions come up. What is the purpose? What is the purpose of evolution where I'm concerned, meaning as an individual? So, who are we? Where are we going? And where have we come from? Those bits of information can be a good guideline. But we wanted to start with the idea of impressions. And we could sort of call it the law of impressions. And we wanted to give you a quote from the philosophy. If you do a thing once, there will be a tendency to do the same thing again. Now, we're all familiar with that information. We've all been through it. So if we do it twice and it doubles its influence on us, there is a greater tendency to do that same thing again and again. So any progress of a formation or of a growth, development, a progressive change is already been in an impression within us. And so what we're going through now and what we could be going through in times will be things that we created, not any outside God, not any outside situation, but we, with our attitude about things that we see and hear, our likes, our dislikes. We're the composer, shall we say, of this whole grand symphony. And the main purpose, the main aim, the intention, the goal, our objectives, our aspirations, they deal with that moment of choice. That is the keynote, because in this whole great vast period of evolution, from the cosmic down to us here, that it is us who have the, shall we say, the power, the initiative to move stuff ahead or move stuff back, because we have that power of choice developed within us. All the other kingdoms work under what we call natural impulses. The units of intelligence that's in those lower kingdoms are of certain degrees, which were mentioned. But when it comes to the thinker entering the physical form to continue its development, we're the motivators. So in a way, this whole idea of evolution, when you think about it, throws a large responsibility upon us as thinkers, or how we're going to act and react in this whole process. And with this whole idea, it's that reunion that has to be made in some lifetime that each individual will know that divinity within, that we are truly spiritual beings evolving. And in a way, we're the head of the campment to bring it forward by rank and otherwise. The process of evolution upon that reunion with the divine will take a long time. Nothing is evolved overnight. That same idea of impressions. Those impressions that we've had and we express in this lifetime have been impressions we have made life after life after life previously, and they keep coming back. We were thinking of, we didn't know, for the majority of the people sitting in this room, they might know what we're talking about. There used to be a time back somewhere in the 50s where you used to get a little card at a carnival, and there would be a picture of a face, and they would tell you, take this picture and look at it, and concentrate on the three dots, and concentrate, and concentrate, and concentrate. Now, put the card down and close your eyes and wait. The impression keeps coming back. You can see the whole picture that you had looked at with your eyes closed. And it goes, and it fades, and then it comes back again. And this is all this has been, shall we say, enhanced within the retina with our eyes and that possibility of that keeping coming back, that same picture, we always thought as youngsters and young people at the time that were getting used to them, and we're talking back in the 40s, this was like magic. How can this happen? What causes this picture to keep coming back? The law of impressions. They're all through us, through our physical build, all the lives within us. We are really responsible for a heck of a lot of stuff that most of us don't even realize. And then when we get the realization, it is very overwhelming. And they're, as we say, they're all degrees of intelligence within the universe, and also intelligence that are beyond ours. Those of the great sages and masters that have also been through this human situation in previous periods of grand evolution. And they know, they have learned and understood the pros and the cons. So that brings us back to this whole idea of the soul. And at all times, we could say, is the evolver. It is the man, the self, consciousness, being that is here in this body, with this self consciousness. As in the lower kingdoms, they do not have or become man. The lives that make up the lower kingdoms, as it evolves, will be part of man. And we know this with just scientific things from today. So we might ask ourselves, well, what about all the pain and suffering that I have to go through, or my friend goes through, or my family goes through? What does that have to do with it? Why does there have to be pain and suffering? And if we honestly think about it, we really only learn from pain and suffering. We really only question. We really only want to find out why this is happening. There are those, it says, that have and feel for others a certain type of circumstance, so that the concept, as it states, of a real brotherhood is established. That the fact that all humans have pain and suffering of some sort. It doesn't matter the color of your skin, where you live, who you are, or what you are. It's a standard thing of, in a way, hopefully learning from the pain and the suffering. And destiny, it says, is not a matter of chance. And we have to understand that the matter of choice is not a thing to be, as it says, to be waiting for. It is a thing to be achieved. So when we think of all these ideas, our character can show that constant return of that cyclic impressions. And hopefully in some lifetime, we can take the ones that are not in harmony with everything around us and work on them so that we can improve the impression and eventually maybe eliminate that impression and have an impression of a higher value, a higher plane for us. So as we were saying, those sages, what is their purpose in this whole process? It is the great sages down through the ages. It is their job to be the preservers of these truly basic ideas that underlie all of life and to keep it alive. And when in the cycle, the karmic cycle allows it, bring it forth. But the fact of the matter is they are, shall we say, the caregivers, and they keep this preserved for their younger brothers, which are we. So when we look at it that way, We're here to gain spiritual knowledge of who and what we really are. And no matter how many lifetimes it takes, that will always be there, because in time, we too can be those who maybe will be able to preserve the basic teachings of all mankind, that we can understand this whole vast period of evolution and what it's all about and what we're here for. It's not for some who used to think, well, life is just a bowl of cherries. Well, for others, it's a life of thorns constantly picking at them. So each one of us can decide at any time and in any life how we want to be part of this whole evolutionary system and be a betterment for all mankind. And when they say the fact of universal brotherhood is, it does exist. It is by learning that we can share with others the same knowledge, this be a help to humanity rather than someone who's just running through it on their own. So this whole vast idea of a plan and a process and a purpose is all laid out and has been laid out through all of the ancient Eastern philosophies and teachings. One can find it, that oneness of all of us. And once we start to understand that, they claim that there will be that time when all will live in peace and harmony. That should be, that has been in past great periods of evolution, that will come back again. So that, in a way, is the purpose. And for us as choosers, we have to decide how we're going to attack this process and what we're going to do about it. So, could there be any questions?
Go ahead.
You were talking about that everything came from that unknown, that spirit, matter, intelligence. So it seems as if everything has come from spirit into matter. So we've always thought of the term that it was involution, that spirit was coming into matter. And now we're talking about evolution. So how do we come to understand this evolution? Is this a spiritual, a physical?
If we look at the idea of true spirits, which we are told to think about, that we are spiritual beings, to incarnate into a form to be able to express it. If we look at it from that extent, spirit could not be known really unless it had some sort of form to work through. So matter needs that fire of spirit to get it ignited of movement. So for really, you're looking at one pole, two different ends, the spirit and matter. It's a policy, it has to be intermixed for growth. And that is truly a spiritual evolution in a way, to come down into matter, to help matter move up the scale. All sorts of matter. That's the system. And it's that spiraling. It's not like a ring. It's more like a screw and the threads on the screw. Yeah. Each time you turn it, it goes around. But it, as it goes around, it's going up at a higher space, a different situation. So the idea of spirit and matter is the idea of, we put the two together. One needs the other. the other cannot express it unless it has a form, and that's the matter. Yes?
Can an individual judge how far they have evolved or how much they have learned, or any other, can they judge any other person based on what is expressed in any one life, in their nature?
Well, we all make judgments, but do we have all the facts? No, we don't, because we've been evolving in these present forms, and that we had other forms before that. Once we were all of one sex or no sex, but we've been in separate sexes now for 18 million years. So we have no idea, unless you're truly a master and can read everyone accurately. We cannot judge. We can only see what's on the surface, and we might be able to accurately guess where this person is coming from, but we don't know all the causes. Was there more to that, or do you want to clarify that a little more, or do we? Okay, all right, okay.
Yes, because we must remember that if we look at our own character, our attitude, what motivates us, we should first look to try to understand ourself, because if in fact we are all really all aspects of the one, all the same in that accent, we should be able to tell within ourselves. But we have to also remember there is a visible side of our nature and there's an invisible side of our nature. And for most of us, we're not aware of both sides at all times.
Right, and like the involution is really the invisible. It's coming from the homogeneous state to the heterogeneous state where it's differentiated. So we don't really see that part of it, the coming down and the involution, because that spark is not given to us until we're in the form. And we all need to have, we need a vehicle to be involved. We need a vehicle, and we have this body and these senses, and the true senses are in the astral, but we have the physical mediators of those senses are visible to us. Yes, this gentleman.
You mentioned there was previous experiences or previous forms, like not male, female, all male, and for that. Was our spirit or soul, or whatever you may call it, in former entities that weren't humans or wasn't male, female? I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay, I think I'm following you on this. The different stages of development as far as how spirit can work through matter, we find from the ancient teachings that these forms that we see now were at one time really gaseous, not the density as it is now, and also the fact that I think it's 15 million years that we became male and female. Prior to that, there were stages of hermaphrodites. There was the one, and then the splitting. But it's for man, the thinker, in the extent of 15 million years, 18 million years. Now the forms are more of a density to them, and we have to remember the cycling, that the evolution of this earth that we see right now is really one of the sevens. And if in fact where we are now, in this fourth realm. We're in the, if you look, coming down from spirit and going around, we're at the densest, shall we say, level of evolution. So of massness, of hard form that we can see. And we are on our way working ourselves back up. So there will come a time when we will not need such a dense physical body. There will come a time of almost, shall we say, a very ethereal type bodies, if any.
What was the word? Ethereal?
Ethereal.
Ethereal. Like kind of like just...
starry, astral.
Yeah, starry matter. That's what astral means, starry matter. So it's... So for half of the period of evolution, we're evolving, and the bodies are being worked on and perfected. And we actually are working on the bodies that we're going to use. But we don't receive... the spark of mind, that fire of self-consciousness, that Promethean fire, we receive that from the solar petries. We receive our bodies from the lunar petries. There's two different groups. It's a vast period of evolution, but the midway point is when we gain that self-consciousness, and then we're instructed by those great initiates and beings, the gods who really walked the earth, that had perfected themselves in prior periods of evolution. We receive instruction in the arts and the sciences and all spiritual matters, but then we're on our own to evolve. They leave the scene, and we have to learn on our own through self-induced and self-devised means. Yeah, go ahead.
With respect to that previous comment about do we know where we are in evolution as an individual, of course, on the one hand, in evolution relative to other people, who could really know, who's further evolved or not, because what we may or may not see is such a small portion of who an individual truly is. However, in a certain way within ourselves, we are endowed with the faculties to estimate our own character. Mm-hmm. We know if we're using our energies and faculties for the highest that we can conceive of or not. And so it would seem that the more discipline and effort that we tend to our own garden to perfect it, then the further along we get, the more we realize how much further we really can evolve. So it's just work on what you got right now, and it's a successive unfolding rather than knowing absolutely I'll end up here. Well, let's just get to where we can get for now and keep trying.
It's a progressive series of awakenings. In the back of the room.
And also as to the part of the question about the sexes and the evolution of such, it's mimicked in our kingdom when a baby is conceived. The first thing that happens is the egg splits one into two. There is no sex to it. There is no identification to it. It's simply a process of splitting over and over to the point where at a certain period the doctor can determine the sex. But in between there's a process going on of all kinds of chromosomes and genes and the whole process of the kingdoms lending their their essence, I guess, to the human body. But the identification of sex comes later, just as in the original evolutionary process.
Yes.
In line with what we just said, we really need but to look to nature to see how how nature has evolved sexually, asexually, you know, that everything is alive. Everything is alive and moving, as was stated, towards something. Everything. And so we see budding, we see all kinds of different processes, and in the animal kingdom, we see how procreation takes place. And isn't it said that man, humanity right now is stuck? It's stuck. It's stuck in desire. Mm-hmm. And that we have become so engrossed in it that it has really stopped our spiritual growth.
And the desires that we're talking about are very tentative desires, here today and possibly gone tomorrow. But we've got ourselves enamored in our personal nature, and we let our senses direct us in certain ways. So as having the power of choice, the next thing is the power to know how to use it, because desire can be used in a good way, and desire can be used in a non-good way, in a selfish way, in an into the person's way. So even though we have that in our nature, we have to learn how to use desire in a proper way, more universal, less individual, personal.
Well, our spiritual advance has not stopped. It's ever proceeding. However, if we get enamored in the desires and the senses and our lower nature, it goes retrograde. Mm. So we're actually, like when the Mercury goes retrograde, it looks like it's going backwards, but it's actually progressing. It's kind of an illusion. And so also we may have thought that we had conquered something in our nature, which is, we'll just say ugly. We'll just say it's something not too pretty, that we thought we had, intellectually, we thought that we had conquered it. And yet, given the right soil, that seed will burst forth and flower again. And we need to take another look at it. And we really need to redouble our efforts to conquer what we thought we had conquered, but we really had not. In the back.
We think, though, the philosophy does say that if we're not moving forward, we're not in neutral. We are, as a thinker in evolution, moving backwards. We haven't lost our powers. We're just not using them correctly. So there is a backwards motion that we then have to work even harder to move forward.
There's always two sides to the same situation of deciding which side we want to work on. It would seem we would want to work on something that's more everlasting than something that's here today and gone tomorrow. It just makes sense.
It seems then that these teachings and our attention to them is for the purpose of identification of who and what we are. Once we identify the self, that individual that I call me, then we see we have a responsibility that we haven't taken care of. And until we do, we stay at the same grade. You fail the first grade, you stay there till you get the lesson, and then you So it seems that we first have to establish some kind of identification of the principles involved. Who am then we're ready to begin. And what we feel, the pain we feel, does not exist in ourselves, capital letters. It's a resistance, would you say, coming from below. And until we conquer, we are the victims, in a sense, because we have identified with what we were supposed to conquer and control.
And we move from there.
Well, we're a microcosm. We're a small universe. We have all the powers and potentialities that exist everywhere within us. And it takes a long time to learn how to control that. That's what's evolution, the course of evolution is to perfect ourselves to the degree possible. Evolution is endless, but in each period, there is a degree of perfection that we must reach before we can go forward. Did you have a follow-up?
Well, yes, we are human beings, are we not? Thinkers.
That's what we are. We're mind beings.
So that must mean that for this particular level of evolution, we are perfect. We don't know it. But we know it. But that those lives that are in control here will stay in control until the dog trainer says heal. That's what we have to do.
Heal thyself.
Heal thyself.
Go ahead.
Before it was mentioned about the two sides, that we can either desire that which is eternal and everlasting, lasting benefit, or that which is just from here and now. Well, sometimes, most of times, we have to desire things for the here and now. We have lives to live. We have responsibilities to live that require the fulfillment of desire in relatively temporal things that we're here and now. So how do we blend the two? How do we live our lives with desires that are appropriate to this plane of existence and yet follow the desires that are appropriate to our higher purpose? Can't they be blended?
To a certain extent, we might say, yes, we all have to be able to have shelter, feed our body. We understand that too. But it seems there's that thing that's called that tanha, that lust for life. There's something in us that's always there that could be the motivator if we would just let it go through. But when we were staying the idea of something that's everlasting, there is a degree for something that has to be done right now and it has to be followed through. We can do this, but there has to be that, shall we say, like that oversoul within us that knows that this is temporary. Do the best I can do in the situation. But there's a part of my nature that's not temporary, that has that driving force to continue. If we can work on that understanding of that higher nature, we have that coming through us all the time, and we don't really listen to it. We speak of it like the voice of our conscience, the voice of silence, that part of us inside that knows this is wrong, this is not harming me, this is hurtful. There's something in us, and half of the time we have so much from the outside coming in that we don't really listen to that part of our nature, but it is there. And it's, you know, you do the best you can in your situation, but this other is something that's not only going to be just for ourselves, but for all of mankind. We could be a helping hand, rather than just concerning ourselves with right now and how it's going.
Well, the blending of the two natures and the rising above it, which is really this subject matter of the Bhagavad Gita, but also next week we noticed the topic will be the critical pivotal point in evolution, and we think that that will be discussed more. Not that we can't discuss it this week, but it should go. We should go into that further next week, because after all, that is a process. It takes eons of time to really to fully integrate, and to be fully self-conscious and to take our evolution in hand and to be directing it instead of just kind of fumbling along. Yes.
So with respect to blending the temporal desires with the higher, I mean, if we're fulfilling our desires, then to fulfill desires actually, by definition, requires creative energy to do that. Mm-hmm. And so to blend it with the higher, then, we think all that really is needed is to ask ourselves, I'm doing this because I need to get it done. What's the purpose that I'm putting into it? Mm-hmm. I'm earning a buck. What am I doing with the buck when it comes in? What's the purpose for all this temporal stuff? And that's the ingredient that the higher self can choose to put into it and blend it, or not.
True. In the back? Yes, you?
Oh,
right here?
Wait.
We think two very important desires to help to achieve that is, first, to be determined to want to learn in order to share it. You want to know because you want to give it to others. And we think the other important one is to look for the meaning in everything that comes to you. If you are a spiritual being and you fashion this mess that you have, then everything has a significance. And we have to start paying attention. So if your desire is to understand, you have to work on the desire of eyes and ears open.
It's interesting because we don't know if anyone's been there. Well, we've been there, but at the Heinz Nature Center by the airport, there's a wonderful ecological and learning center. And nature is the great arcanum, so it's a great place to go. But it was funded, we believe, solely by a man who used to like to hike through the woods there, who lived in a little row house, who nobody knew had anything because he never displayed his wealth. And he left millions of dollars, we don't know how many, in his will to build this center. And we think, too, it's wonderful. Actually, this city's wonderful because we have so many parks and so much nature. And that a lot of children, you can only learn so much online. But to see the whole process of the marshes and the purification of water and everything, it's just a wonderful thing, and we highly recommend it. It's 84th and Bartram is the address. So, did you have anything?
Oh. Wait.
So. This whole conversation this morning was about that we're perfectible and that we are moving toward that. And you brought out the fact that about being selfish, and I don't think we use those terms, but it is not selfishness the biggest thing that we have to deal with, that personal idea that we do not do certain things, we will be looked at as if we are stupid, or if we're not attractive, or if we're not this and we're not that. How do you rise above that? What is, there seems to be a basic philosophy and theosophy of impersonality. How do we apply that to our?
Well, we were just wondering, as you were talking, like, I think most of us, not all of us, are more concerned about what other people think about us than we think about ourselves. I mean, we can have a conversation with ourselves, and we can know when we're really pushing the limits and when we're not pushing the limits, when we're doing something out of the goodness of it being done rather than who's going to pat me on the back and who's going to tell me. So maybe we shouldn't worry so much about this selfishness and about what other people think. It's like, can you honestly sit down and think to yourself, what do I think of myself? And we really can tell. We know before we have to have other people tell us. So that part of it is maybe try to clean up, as they say, clean up your own doorstep before you go out to help others. Part of that would be is, you know, take care of your, get your house in order type thing. And really worry about that more, and for the convenient of it, of making a development and involvement with all the around us. Think of it as a more positive rather than as a negative. Because does it really matter what other people think of us if we don't even know inside ourselves when we're worthy or not worthy of what we're acting and reacting to?
Yeah, the self with the small s, yeah, the personality, it's a vehicle as well. It's a vehicle for learning. It's trial and error. And if we stay in that small s self, we're going to, if we just keep that mindset that we are our bodies, we are our feelings, we are our circumstances, and it seems like the majority of the world operates that way, we're going to run into trouble time and time again until we can rise above it. We need to rise above the self to the self of all and realize that, you know, we're all one, really. We're all interconnected. And it's that's the process of evolution, and that's the purpose of evolution, and one is rising above the self and becoming one with all, the self of all.
We just want to mention there's a small little pamphlet, I think it's 50 cents, yes. It's called The Epitome of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. And just in this one, there's a lot of short little hints that are very helpful. And it says, the careful performance of every duty belonging to one's station in life without desire for reward, leaving results for the divine law. In other words, to live within it. But there's a lot of little goodies in here, just to get us thinking in how we should react and not act. So that's what I was going to close with, was part of those, but I'm just thinking the time is up. One can read it for themselves if they don't want to purchase it. There's copies in the library to read. And the meeting is adjourned.